Sword of Omens, come to my hand. I, Lion-O, command it. I also command that you keep listening to Adrian Has Issues.
Hello and welcome to Adrian Has Issues. I guess first I feel bad, and maybe I shouldn't even, you know, pull the curtain up because nobody really needs to know, but at the same time
no one needs to see behind the curtain. Close the curtain.
Exactly. But I feel like first and foremost, I always want to be honest with my listeners. Like, I feel like if nothing else, people can say, you know what, I'm going to tell them straight. Today's guest.
There's no one back there. There's really no one behind the curtain.
Today's guest, who I'm going to introduce in a second, who you've actually just heard, he is an amazing, award-winning writer, illustrator, publisher, and we're going to get into all that, of a comic series called Nowhere Man. We recorded this once before. We had this great conversation, and thanks to the wonderful world of technical glitches, the conversation got lost. But that's okay. He's back. And we're going to do this again, and I think we're going to have just about as much fun, if not even more fun.
I think so. I think we're going to have a lot of fun this time.
Jerome Walford. Jerome, again, hello, and well, I guess I should say welcome back.
Thanks for having me on again, Adrian. It's great to be here with you, and yeah, I'm actually looking forward to this. We had a great time, a great conversation, and, you know, we found a cure to cancer, and we kind of lost it in that little glitch there, but maybe we'll discover it again.
And I feel bad because we spent, like, prior to starting the show proper, I made the joke about making sure everything was great, all the levels were good, and making sure that the recording programs are going. And you mentioned something along the lines of, it'd be almost like a scientist discovering the cure for cancer and somehow lost the formula.
Yeah, pretty much. But hey, no, it was a good time. It was a good time, so.
It was a great time. But again, Nowhere Man is an amazing comic. So like we did last time, I'm just gonna just start off the bat, let everybody know what is the premise of Nowhere Man.
So Nowhere Man is a crime drama slash detective drama that follows a cop based in New York City, and the story really evolves from being this kind of very gritty big city detective story into a sci-fi thriller slash superhero story. And it centers around this character by the name of Jack McGuire. Now, Jack McGuire is a character that's quite relatable. You know, he has a lot of struggles and baggage that is quite familiar. And so as he moves through the story, you kind of see this character learning how to balance his desire to become a great cop just to live up to his father's memory, but at the same time being sort of drawn into this almost impossible situation that will hopefully carve him out to be the first superhero that ever lived.
Just to tell the story, and actually I should have just started the show by telling the story beforehand. Now, this is going back a couple of weeks at Eternal Con, I guess the middle of June in Long Island. It was funny because I saw your book and I'm saying to myself, wait a minute, I've seen this book before, and I told the story of my friend, my former co-host of my old podcast. I don't know how he heard about you. I'm not sure if it was maybe just through like the internet or even a panel, but he was supposed to meet me for a panel. We were going to go hang out at New York Comic Con. This is maybe back, I want to say 2014. He's like, all right, well, we'll go to this panel. But I got to meet the guy that did Nowhere Man. I've been hearing so much about it. It's a great book. I'm like, all right. And one thing about my co-host is he's one of those people, like, when he's very, I don't want to say low energy, but, you know, he's very kind of like, you know, he lays in a cut. But when he's very excited about something, he gets really amped about it. So halfway through the panel, like, he leaves me and practically runs to go find your book.
That's great.
And it was so great to finally sit down, and I picked up volume one just to kind of get a little taster, and I was hooked. What was great about the story is that even before you get into the sci-fi aspect, you've already built this great world and this, you know, this great cop drama, And from even from that angle, it was already this great story, which only got better thanks to the supernatural sci-fi part of it. So obviously you have a very big background and appreciation for cop dramas and, dare I say, urban crime thrillers.
No, absolutely. One of the things that I do a lot of is watch these cop shows. That's one of my favorite pastimes. And so it was only natural for me to sort of think about kind of story that I would enjoy working on, and then finding ways to bring that element into the story. And yeah, just about any cop show you can think of, I've probably watched at least a couple seasons of. You know, I'm a big CSI fan. And you just go down a list, you know, Law and Order, you name it, you know, just basically any cop show that you've probably seen on a regular TV, I'm pretty much into. And so when I thought about a story that would be interesting, that would work really well in a big city like New York City, you know, a cop drama just seemed to really work for me. And of course, you know, because it's in the comic book form, I want to do something that would show my love and appreciation of, you know, the superhero stuff that we pretty much all grew up on, right?
Right.
And so I thought it was a great opportunity to merge these three three interests together, bringing in the sci-fi element too.
I personally was so into the cop story because, to give a little backstory, my dad was a cop, fairly recently retired, mm-hmm. Out of Paterson, New Jersey, which is where I grew up. And
wow.
And the thing is with my dad now, I mean, granted, there was the urging, like, oh, are you going to be a cop too? Which, of course, it was almost like a running joke between the two of us going back and forth.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, he was a cop, and he went from just being, you know, your standard patrolman to officer to detective and then, you know, sergeant. Then eventually became, he ran the local PBA for a very long time. So knowing my dad obviously had a name within the city, and it was always funny because you'd go into certain places and it's like, oh, hey, you know, you're Ron King's kid.
Right, right.
And
exactly.
It was one of those things I used to always joke about. I could never really be that knucklehead on the corners because, you know, they'd see me in a heartbeat and go call my dad.
Right, right. that's a great story, and I'm glad that that portion of the story really connects for you, because that's one thing I try to be, you know, almost as real life as possible within the story. You know, certainly it has some great elements to it that are, you know, that kind of draws on the imagination of what is not possible this time. But as far as the actual, you know, the heart of the story, the actual characters, there's a lot of those little moments that you get where you kind of see that this guy is trying to find his way, you know, Jack McGuire is trying to find his way. But at the same time, you know, there's this heavy burden that he carries that comes from, you know, his father being just a great cop, or, you know, this really honorable guy who died on 9/11 as a first responder. And so, you know, you kind of see him now trying to figure out how does he fit into that legacy, and if he's able to sort of live up to the acts of bravery that his father was able to accomplish. And so you kind of see him kind of trying to figure that out, doing right. his best to live up to that, and, you know, failing horribly.
And multiple times, though. What's so great about it is that, okay, you have a character who is living in the shadow of his father, who at this point in the story has like a larger than life persona. Yeah. And yet his son, who, and again, Jack, he's very well-meaning, you know, first and foremost. He's trying to do the right things.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's prone to being brash. He screws up a lot. But again, and it's not even, which is sad or kind of funny, though, is that it's not even just even him trying to deal with his, you know, living in his father's shadow, but he's also being possessed by another person. So yeah. He's got that going for him. So, I mean, wow, you can't win for losing.
Yeah, one of the things that I think, you know, for this particular story, it has so many layers. It's one of the aspects of it that I really loved, you know, as I was scripting it, was that it had so many layers. And so there were many different possibilities and different directions in which the script could go. And, you know, so yeah, just to kind of give a little bit of that angle as well, you know, Jack, at some point, you know, before the story actually kicks off, he becomes fused with this other person, this secondary person who has very different motivations, has a very different perspective on life, and has a very particular mission he wants to accomplish, right? So imagine now Jack having the burden of trying to live up to his father's shadow. And through this event, he gains these powers, but the consequence is now he's basically sharing his consciousness, he's sharing his motivations with this person who has a very particular mission he wants to accomplish that involves breaking the law at basically at every level. And so that's a very challenging situation for the character to be in, because he's basically lived this most of his life, at least once he joined the force, being, you know, a straight arrow, you know, doing things as hard as he could, you know, as best as he could, but, you know, basically on the quote unquote right side of the law. And so there are these different scenes in the story as it develops where you realize that Jack goes unconscious, and then he doesn't, he never really quite knows what he's been up to.
Right.
Sometimes his only clue as to what events happened was to watch the news the next day to basically figure out what kind of pretty bad things he's been up to.
And what was in, that was very great, and because I know one of the running themes in the book is ever since he's had this take over him, he has not physically slept. Because, you know, he says, and we might get into, I should preface this and say, we might get into a little bit of spoilers. I'll try to keep them down. But the problem is, when I get excited about something, I start saying, hey, wasn't it great when this happened? So trust me, I'm going to try to like keep it down. So that way, you know, people won't have read the entire book from listening to us. But it was great.
Right, we'll give a little bit of a warning.
Because he was, you know, the idea of here's this guy who... And unlike, let's say, like a Spider-Man who, I mean, in the comics, his path from being, you know, this angst-ridden kid to being his hero, it's a fairly quick process. But in this one, even with all this great power, he's still having an issue with the responsibility part. And he's, unfortunately, it's keeping him at bay with his partner and love interest, Rose, whom, wow, I mean, Rose is a great character in and of herself.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. And, you know, there's this great little section that I really enjoyed working on where, again, we won't give a spoiler here, but for certain reasons, Jack was not able to be the narrative voice for that section of the story. So, you know, it afforded this great opportunity to have her step into the limelight and see how she's able to tell the events from her perspective, from her point of view. And that really allowed me to kind of bring her to the forefront, because in many ways, she's the opposite of Jack. You know, she's very laid back, very reserved, and, you know, very skilled, very, very good at her job. But at the same time, just is quite unsure for herself. And so the story basically follows Jack and Rose, who are basically on opposite paths, if you will. Jack learning how to not be so brash and not be so, you know, just kind of just running and just kind of do without asking questions. Moving from being that kind of personality to becoming much more thoughtful, much more methodical about the way he goes about what he does. While for Rose, she's really stepping into her own and learning how to become her own person and just really take the initiative.
Right. And you really feel for her, too, because in a way, she is very much the she kind of represents that center and that balance that.
Yeah.
For all intents and purposes, Jack basically lacks, whether it be from his own personality and the struggles to, of course, you know, these powers that he has. And she's really pretty much just trying to hold it down for him.
Yeah,
and for her.
Yeah.
And, you know, God bless her, because I know. It actually made me think about my own girlfriend, because I know me, I'm emotions first, so, you know, anything I feel, I just go with it, and it's like, to have that other person to basically kind of be that center for you, pretty impressive, but at the same time, Rose is her own person, she has her own motivations and desires, and you really feel for the character, because again, try not to get into spoilers, but she's... You know, she has her own sort of path going. And like you said, we're at that point in the story where they're not exactly lining up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that really helps, because when you have a character who is unrestrained, whether it is, you know, they have unlimited power, or they don't have that, you know, that kind of personality along with them in the story, it really creates a very, you know, unbalanced character or an unbalanced story. you know, you really need characters who have limitations and have struggles to make them that much more relatable, and also to have a very strong counterweight to them, you know, in the story. And I think Rose does that really well for Jack.
And you managed to do that quite well because, again, we've watched thousands of shows, whether it be from, like, you know, back in the day, like when I was barely walking, you know, when Hill Street Blues came out, to, you know, NYPD Blue or even Law and Order, even as, recently as, like, Rich. The Wire, which, I mean, holy crap, one of my favorites.
Right, right.
You've managed to take these cop shows, and unfortunately it's TV, so they're very heavy with tropes, but found a way to subvert them in a way that, you know, it's not the standard. Like, you know, you get the, you know, your harder, you know, hardest detective. You get your bumbling kind of, I guess, I don't want to call him comedy relief, but we'll get to him in a minute. But you have all these characters, and you managed to find a very good way to kind of take what's done, but yet put a fresh, relatable spin on it. Like, I mean, is that a challenge at every point where you're coming up with either a character or a situation, and it's like having to mull over, okay, what was done before, and how could I not do that?
Yeah, it's definitely quite a challenge. And so Nowhere Man has been in the process of scripting and writing for a long time, a really long time. So just to give a little bit of quote-unquote ancient history, the characters in Nowhere Man are loosely based on characters I had since high school. So they go really far back. And Nowhere Man in this particular iteration of this series here, I started writing maybe around 08. And then I started a webcomic in 2010. And it was really after going through those different variations on the story and coming up with something that I felt was much stronger and the characters much more developed and much more well-rounded, is really when I started to publish the books in print form in 2012. So, you know, having that much time with the characters, even the quote-unquote secondary characters, allowed me the opportunity to really flesh them out.
Well, I mentioned him before, but another one of my favorite characters is Christopher Sanchez, who is hilarious.
he's great. He's a lot of fun to write for.
Like, you get the impression that, and again, this is speaking, of course, to your credit, is that you have a character who is, he's a little, I shouldn't say, like, I guess, you know, he's kind of a klutz. He represents a lot of the humor and maybe more of a lighthearted nature to the book where, and again, this isn't necessarily like a jab at the book though, but again, it's a very serious story.
It is.
But yet, to have that nice little dash of humor and not laughably so, like he's not a caricature, like he still has his own motivations. And at the end of the day, he's a damn good cop, but it's just so funny. The stuff that he does and comes out of his mouth, it's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, it's a great thing to see that happen. And that development actually came fairly late in the process. Chris didn't really emerge until I was on perhaps the third iteration of the script. And, I had that struggle. I felt that the story needed, you know, just a little bit of humor just to kind of make it not so heavy all the way throughout. And one of the early realizations was that I need just a little bit of a humor element, but you know, Jack is not funny. I actually had a couple of scenes where I tried to bring a little bit of humor through Jack, but you know, you can't do sort of the straight punchline with him. It has to be very dry wit. So I thought I had this other character that's kind of in the background. Maybe I can try to bring him to the forefront a little bit have that be a main component to his character. But at the same time, there are some scenes in the story where he becomes, you know, the very insightful, you know, the very thought-provoking character who says some things that are just really on point.
So let's get more into the science fiction part of the story. When you first wrote, like, you had these characters and you had these concepts back in high school. Now, was the science fiction part even then a major proponent, or was that something that was added in later on after the fact?
That part developed very slowly. You know, I always thought of there being sort of this really strange twist on the central character. You know, it took a while to really figure out what that was. And so the science fiction aspect came in, you know, fairly late in the scripting process where I felt, you know, like, yeah, I need something here that's going to be another layer to the story. And so Noir Man went from this what I wanted, which was a very gritty crime story, to evolving into something that brought in a lot of my other passions, which was sci-fi. And so I was thinking, how do I kind of fit these components together? And it took a little while, but after a while, it began to really gel. And in some ways, it had a very poetic way of emerging too. And I try to bring that out in the script as well. There are certain components or certain scenes where it has a very poetic flow to the narrative, and hopefully that shines through, particularly in volume two. Hopefully you see that there.
Right. And that's the part that's also very cool, because, again, when you see a lot of origin stories with characters, yes, like, okay, it's your every man who, of course, has his own struggles there, or he or she, I should say, they'll get a power, which is great, but then, you'll get maybe a couple of panels and seeing them kind of dealing with it, but it seems like right off the bat, they get this power, then immediately they're off and running. You don't really see... And it's kind of unfortunate, like you see with some of your more mainstream superhero books, where you don't really get to see the process of them actually learning to then deal with these powers or finding ways to really come to grips. Because I'd imagine, like myself, of course, any kid or person growing up is like, how great would it be to have powers of like flight or super strength and things like that? But I know good and damn well, if I had those powers, A, I'm going to be scared, and B, I'm pretty sure it's going to cause like a lot of hardships.
Oh, right. And so, for me, I want to maintain that heart of a superhero story. I wanted when someone reads Noir Man that they sort of feel that same feeling that they had as a kid or even as a young adult when they discovered that this person was some kind of superhero or had some kind of super ability, that they would sort of see a little bit of themselves in that character. And so there's a couple of scenes in very early in the series where Jack is telling just a little bit about the way he perceives what he can do. He sort of says, here's what I know I can do. Here's what I know I can't do. And one of the important things that he can't do is that he doesn't have that sort of super strength, right? So he can't just outright overpower someone because of this, having that on his side. But he can do all these other things, which are, a bit uncharacteristic for him as a person. So for example, the technology that he has allows him to be very evasive, allows him to pass through walls, block bullets, and hack computers. And, on a personal level, he hates computers. So here he is wielding technology that gives him superpowers. And one of the main powers that he has is being able to, extract information from technological devices. And he just does not know how to do that properly. And so, yeah, he has this huge learning curve.
it provides some really compelling writing. I feel bad because, again, when I met you, I only picked up the first volume. So I'm like, oh, shit. Like, I really wish I had bought the rest of the book because I don't want to know what happens. And I'm like, wait, hold on.
Yeah, no, that's a good thing. I really want to get people addicted to the story. And
mission accomplished.
Yeah, I think it's working out pretty good. Yeah, whenever I do the shows, I get a lot of fans come running over and saying, I've got to grab the rest. I got to know what happens next. So that's a good feeling as a writer.
Clearly, this book has gotten a lot of attention because upon looking at the cover for the first volume, the first thing I'm seeing is Glyph Comics Awards winner for Best Male Character. You've been nominated the same year for Best Artist and Best Cover. So, I mean, for a story that you've written all this time to then get that recognition, I mean, that's got to be pretty amazing to then realize that, hey, something I've been toiling on for so many years has, finally started to, reap some rewards and some benefits.
Oh, absolutely. It was definitely a really amazing experience and quite an honor to get those nominations. As a both a producer and publisher, that's one part of the business where, I had to do a lot of research and figuring out what would help to get the story out there and to get some notice. So a part of the process is to submit your work to these award shows or committees that will review your work and see whether or not you qualify. And so I tell you, this was an amazing honor to be nominated last year by the Glyph Comics Awards in those three categories. And it was totally unexpected. I mean, I knew that I had to do the work, you know, do those submissions and really try to get my work out there. But to be nominated that year, too, because that was a very strong year for those categories. And to then actually win for Best Male Character, I mean, out of those three categories that I was nominated for, that's the one I least expected to win for. And I was so glad I did because, you know, it really, for me, speaks to, you know, how significant this particular character is and how all those years of hard work were starting to pay off.
Right. And something that we had talked about when we last recorded is that it's clear as to why a character like Jack would get such praise, because in reading a lot of other comics, and again, this is of no detriment to other creators, the unfortunate aspect of there are a few, you know, you have, let's say, Luke Cage, you have Black Panther, there's Miles Morales, Spider-Man, and also I know there's Blue Marvel, who is going to be in yet another Avengers-type book, but I mean, he's kind of more of on a smaller scale, but you do have, I mean, quite a number of, you know, black male superheroes, but I mean, not all of them have had the pleasure of being kind of being brought up in a modern era.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, a lot of them, you know, back in during, let's say, like the 60s, maybe even the 70s, Luke Cage especially, you know, there's some dubious origins because a lot of them played on a lot of, I guess, stereotypes, and even like especially during like the blaxploitation era.
Sure.
So then you have a character like Jack McGuire, who's very modern, and yes, I mean, there's certain things that I guess are universal all across the board, but here's a guy who doesn't really play up to that. Like, he's basically, you know, a man is every bit of, you know, conflicted as anybody else would be. And again, it shows that, hey, this isn't necessarily a character who is, you know, doesn't play up on a lot of the same, you know, things that you see in a lot of other characters. And it definitely comes through.
Yeah. And so, you know, like you said before, we're not necessarily knocking what other folks are doing, you know, but, you know, one of the things that we talked about was that when you look at the totality of the amount of books published each year, even just within comics, only a very small percentage of that has a minority character as a lead character, right? So, you know, that being a starting point, you kind of realize that, okay, if I put something out there, you know, am I doing something that is so commonplace, you know, having a strong black male as the lead, is that something that's so complex, I don't need to do that. That the answer to that obviously is not true, because again, when you look at the total numbers of books published each year, such a small sliver of that has a minority character. Now, even within that small sliver, even a smaller amount of them actually have a character that has less of that, you know, quote unquote, dubious upbringing. You know, we're talking about the stereotypes of being in a gang or being in prison, being a drug addict, you know, all those things that is unfortunately all too commonplace in how we represent, you know, a black character, particularly a black male character. And so for us, for Forward Comics, when we thought about, you know, how do we construct a really good story, a very edgy story, but at the same time, you know, all those stereotypes were off the table. You know, it was like,
right,
when we think about how we develop this character, you know, what kind of things are going to work as being an interesting story, but at the same time, you know, would not play into those stereotypes. And so we're very deliberate about that.
Right. Now, is there like any sort of challenges, or I don't want to say struggles because that's maybe too harsh a word, but you know, that constant challenge of, okay, you want to make a compelling story, but then you also realize that, you know, there's that maybe the portion of you that felt that you maybe had to represent a voice that wouldn't be there in, let's say, traditional mainstream comic books. Like, does that ever come up at all?
Well, sure, it does. And I think, you know, when you have a writing and editing team that comes from a diverse background, it makes it easier to tell a story that's much more relatable and rings true to those experiences. And so, yeah, you know, challenge is a good word. You know, that's totally fitting, because there's a lot of work that goes into making that work, to try to craft something that, again, is relatable, that is interesting, that is at the same time edgy, but not playing into a lot of the common stereotypes. And so one of the things that I think a lot of fans have seen in the story that they really appreciate is that the character, you know, just about anyone from any walk of life almost can sort of see a little bit of themselves in the character, because he is so well-rounded, and really the rest of the characters in the story are quite well-developed. And so we spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to do something that is familiar, but at the same time, you know, not sort of, you know, sort of a canned stereotype that you typically see.
And especially now, because I'm sure you've read the news, and, well, I mean, we talked about it already, but I think this was a very interesting point, is fairly recently, I know Marvel got into a little bit of heat.
Yeah.
They just announced recently they're doing hip-hop themed variant covers for their new line of books coming out within the next few months. And on one end, I did like a lot of the homages because, again, they were great album covers and it's nice to see them sort of reinterpreted. However, the controversy came in because there was, you know, the sentiment that while it's great that Marvel embraces this culture, but yet a lot of the people who, because again, I mean, it's hip hop is, you know, started a lot, you know, within Black communities. It's something that is very original between us, but yet you don't see many of them working within mainstream comic books. So, I mean, there was definitely a lot of issue there as far as, okay, is it an appreciation or is it an appropriation?
Yeah, it's a very tricky time to be producing because, you know, I'm certainly glad to see diversity become a subject of interest again. You know, it seems to go in and out of vogue, if you will. know? But right now it's in vogue. You know, a lot of people want to talk about diversity. A lot of folks want to say that they are doing things that embraces diversity. And so I don't want to necessarily knock everything that the big two are doing in that regard. And so particularly on the subject matter of, you know, what's up with these hip-hop covers, you know, I think it's justified to have that conversation and say, you know, is this really about showing that you appreciate diversity, or is it simply just lip service? You know, these covers were awesome in their own right. And so even though you have the blessing of a lot of these artists that produced that work, diversity needs to be comprehensive. And so whenever I get into a conversation with someone about what does it mean to see diversity in comics or any particular industry, it means to really have a comprehensive approach. It's not just about having sort of the character on the outside being, you know, African-American, you know, sort of just the face, right? What's the voice of that character? What's the experiences of that character? And if you don't have a writing staff or editing staff that is able to bring those stories into that character and breathe life into that character, then, you know, it's very hard to pull it off. It's very hard to make that something that people can say, yeah, that's believable. That's a character that I can embrace because I can see myself in them, because you can sort of see on the opposite side of that character, the writing and the heart that goes into it, you know, just being something that you can look at and say, yeah, that makes sense to me. So if it's just for the cover and the content on the inside doesn't ring true to the minority experience, then it's almost all for naught. I mean, you know, you're wasting your time just sort of saying, okay, yes, this is our answer to the question of diversity. If it's just a series of covers, just to pay lip service, then, you know, it's really not enough. It's not comprehensive.
It's a very trying time because, and it's like you said, this topic of discussion has come up a lot fairly recently. But at the same time, I guess this is why I'm almost glad that we are now in a place where, and I'm not going to lie, there's a lot of stuff that's going on that needs to change. I'm not definitely not knocking that. However, I will say, though, this is also a very great time because there's so many great publishers and, you know, writers and artists who maybe not working for, let's say, a mainstream title, who are now producing work that I think in a way maybe better represents the current, I guess, cultural landscape, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And I'm talking all across the board, not even just a matter of black and white. And that's why what's great about what you do, because, again, you're not even just a writer or artist. You're also a publisher.
Yeah. And so that kind of evolved very, you know, organically and just out of desperation. You know, Forward Comics came about because while looking at Nowhere Man and trying to preserve the story in its integrity and what I was trying to do, it was very difficult to do that as someone who had no history in comics. So by the time I was ready to start putting material out there, I was shopping it around. I talked to a couple of agents and editors and publishers, and they were saying, you know, we love what you're doing. You know, it's pretty cool, but you know, we can't take a chance on that right now. So while that was discouraging, at the same time, you know, kind of looking around and realizing that we had access to a lot of the same tools that these bigger publishers were using. So why not just go out there and put it out in the format and in the spirit that we had intended? And so that's really how Forward Comics came about. You know, we're a publisher that's focused on telling stories that have a bit more heart to them, that are socially conscious and are very selective in the work that we publish. So we're not focused on producing a lot of work. We're focused on producing, you know, high quality work. And so hopefully No War Man is a really big installment towards seeing that vision come about for us.
Right. But at the same time, it's also important because, you know, we talk about diversity, but it also helps a lot in the business aspect. Yeah. Because it's funny. My girlfriend said something the other day, it might have even been yesterday, that was so very true that it's like, in a way, it's almost not enough to kind of just do one thing. Like, if you could do one thing and do one thing well, that's great. But I guess these days, you really have to know multiple sides of a business to really kind of get anywhere. So that's really cool, because now you write, you draw, and now you're a publisher. But at the same time, you're still having to now cultivate maybe other works. Absolutely. Or even your own to make sure that this is quality stuff. So, I mean, again, where do you find the time for all that? Do you like how?
It's hard to find a time, and so we have to be very laser focused over here on the projects that we're working on. And that's one of the reasons why we don't take on a lot of projects. We take on very few projects. And so right now, Nowhere Man is the main flagship title that we're working on. And we have a series of other short stories that we have been developing, which have been very exciting for us to craft and make sure that they fit into the same vision that we have for Forward Comics. So one of those stories that will be ready by New York Comic Con is Moon's Ostrich, which is a short story, an all-ages story set in a steampunk, alternate timeline. And so that's been really fun to work on, because we want to make sure that we have a well-rounded offering, that we have something for those who love the gritty, dark stuff, but at the same time, something that, you know, just about anyone can enjoy. So yeah, it's a lot of learning. It's a lot of research, and so we try to make sure that even though we don't put out a lot of work each year, we want to make sure that what we do put out, you know, can sit on the same shelf as anything from a big publisher.
Pushing Nowhere Man is a very big deal. So is there now, after of course the core volumes, are you going to expand the story into more volumes, or what's next for the series?
Well, we're looking at a lot of different opportunities for Nowhere Man. You know, certainly, you know, we had this great conversation about whether or not we can see it in another medium.
Oh, that's right. Because I was saying it would be great as a TV show.
I would love to see that happen. So, you know, we're continuing to network and, hopefully something pans out with that. That would be a great opportunity certainly for us and for this project that we put so much love into. So, right now we have just completed, earlier this year, we completed book number 6 in the series. And so again, that book number 6 closes out volume 2. So we're just looking to promote that and get the word out, let people see what's going on there, and hopefully grow our fan base, you know, by significant numbers this year. The goal is for us to come back to Nowhere Man and do a really big epic closer with it at some point. We're actually right now crafting and working on the script so that it can be, again, very very polished, very nuanced, very layered, addition to the series. And so while we're working on that, we are branching out and doing quite a few different projects that are going to be coming out at the end of this year and early next year. Some of it I can talk about. Other things are really exciting, but unfortunately I can't talk about just yet. So one of those things I mentioned,
fair enough.
One of those things I mentioned before is Moon's Ostrich. We're also working on another short story called The Scientist, which is basically a sci-fi slash horror short that we're working on, and that will be hopefully up by the end of the year. More details as that comes together. Another project, which I don't think I mentioned before, but we also have been working on a young adult fantasy series, which is called Curse of the Griffin. And we currently have the first book out in that series. We're actually just doing a little bit of touch up work to that, and we're going to be talking about that a lot more at the end of this year once the re-release happens. Okay. And so if you're into high fantasy stories that has, you know, magic and mystical creatures, but you're also into like supernatural, you know, urban supernatural stuff, you're going to really like this, because those two worlds clash in this particular series, where the central character, Daniel Griffin, is basically a artist living on the streets trying to survive in a town where you have to convert to becoming a vampire, you know, to get a job.
Oh, wow. Holy cow.
You know, imagine trying to just get by and survive in a world where basically, you know, you're at every turn, everyone's trying to convince you as to why it's so great to be a vampire and why you really should, you know, convert, you know, and basically you can't get a job or make a living without doing it. And so it's a dark, quirky story about this kid who's basically he doesn't realize until like halfway through the story that he's actually a refugee from this fallen kingdom where it was ruled by magic, and they basically, you know, were basically living at the top of, you know, the top of the food chain, and so now he has to go out and reclaim his heritage.
That's fantastic. I'm sorry. I just had this vision of going to like a job interview and they're looking over the paperwork here. It's like, oh, you got a lot of great references, you know, good stuff. Oh, but it says here you don't drink blood. Unfortunately, you know, it's like, all right, we'll call you back.
Right. It's, you know, you have a lot of those really quirky scenes in the series. So one of the great examples that I love is actually we opened up the first book in the series is called Daniel's Pride. The first scene there is where Daniel is waiting online at the bank for the quote unquote ATM. And you don't realize until after he's about ready to step into the booth that it's actually a blood ATM. So it actually it draws your blood in exchange for cash. And you know, if you have not yet converted to vampires, that's basically one of the only ways you can basically get cash. And so it's kind of dark and quirky, and I think it really works because it sets up this really great paradigm that's, you know, that's very dark. But then you have this kid who's basically, you know, just on the verge of becoming an adult, and you know, what do you do with your life when you can't really fit into the societal mold that's been set out for you? And so it's been a great series to work on. So we're looking forward to really pushing that more.
That sounds like a lot of fun. I can't wait to read that because I'm thinking about it. It's like, wow, like vampirism as a means of economics. Huh?
Yeah, yeah. And we actually got some great reviews, some great preliminary reviews on the series. And, you know, they really love that that juxtaposition of, you know, economics and vampirism. What does it really mean to be a vampire? You know, we actually had this great section in the story where from vampire's point of view, they kind of explain what it really means to be a vampire. And, you know, kind of if you get into the psychology of it, where, you know, it's not so much even about the drinking of the blood. It's really about the desire to own people, the desire to consume them and take what they have in order to make your life better. So, yeah, I mean, it just has lots of really great layers to it. You know, again, for horror comics, we're thinking about stories that have a lot of really layered meaning to it.
That sounds very cool, and I'm already excited to read this, because as I'm reading this, it almost reminds me of what was that, the very first Blade, the Wesley Snipes one, where you had the Deacon Frost character who's like, you know, humans are food and that's basically how we survive, but yet the rest of the vampires, they're almost like miniature corporations, you know, they're making all these deals with, you know, humans and things like that as a means of gaining more business and political power, and not necessarily just running around the streets just biting people, because it's like we are trying to control things on a much larger scale than what we used to traditionally do, and there's something very interesting about that. So again, I'm already on board for that. I can't wait.
That's
to
great. Excellent. That's great. Yeah, because that's what we're really getting at, you know, this really complex layered ways of looking at you know, society and societal norms, you know, what's truly normal. And what do we accept as being normal that, you know, some, you know, in another context might just seem, you know, really harsh or just really, you know, a really terrible way to live. So we've been really just trying to find ways to, you know, bring those aspects into our storytelling where, you know, we're telling stories that are entertaining, fun, and thrilling, but at the same time, just, you know, begins to ask some really tough questions.
I think that more now than ever, we need those types of stories out there because there's a way you can do that in any great work, whether it be a comic book or a novel or even like a TV show. Most great stories find a way to, like I said, entertain, maybe, I guess, give you an idea into society, regardless of whatever time period it is. And doing so in a way where it's not like preachy or heavy-handed.
Yeah.
But just doing it, just basically just telling it as it is. And again, I think this is a time where we really need those types of books out.
Yeah, you know, being a small press publisher, you know, Forward Comics, that's one of the really great advantages that we have. Certainly, you know, there's a lot of things we have to learn about the business side of things. But, you know, we really have that autonomy where we can sort of begin to sit down and say, what kind of stories do we really want to see out there in the marketplace? What kind of stories we think are going to really matter? I mean, the stories that really last, you know, and are really timeless are the stories that really get at those really strong issues that go to the core and the heart of who we are, that really begins to explore what, you know, what truly is the human condition. And that's what we're all about at Forward Comics. We're all about trying to get to the heart of that and trying to find a way to capture that in a story that can be passed on.
So one question I always like to ask, and I know we asked this before, but I think this is a great story. Do you remember the very first comic book you ever read?
Oh, yes.
I love this story, and I'm almost glad that, maybe I'm not necessarily glad, but I'm so glad I get to hear this again.
All right, so, you know, like a lot of kids, yeah, I read comic books, but the first one I actually remember reading was this really ripped up version or copy of Titans, you know, before the very popular Teen Titans that we have now. They were just, you know, the Titans, right? And so you had characters like Cyborg, Raven, Starfire, and I'm not sure in my copy if Robin or Nightwing was on the team yet, because you know, it was incomplete. I mean, you literally had like ripped out pages and stuff that was you know just chewed up. But man, it was that's the first story I can remember reading. And actually, in this particular issue, it might have been like an origin issue. And I wish I kept it, no matter how dogged and ripped apart it was, because basically had each page was dedicated to the origin story of each individual character.
That's so funny, because I'm thinking to myself, and what I said to you before was, how great is it? And it speaks to the power of comic books that even a book that's torn up,
oh, yeah,
torn to shreds, pages missing, someone could still pick this up and basically just have their whole world opened up. So I think that's why I love comics as a medium, because no matter how old I get, sometimes I'll read a story and I'll feel just like I did when I read my first comic. Or, you know, when I was a teenager, it's like, it's one of those things that it's just very universal. And it's such a great story. And I was laughing because yeah, one of the first comics you read was, you know, the Titans, you know, maybe an origin story of them forming. But one of the very first Titans comic I read was when the Titans Tower blew up. So
right,
then I just
yeah,
gave up. And I'm like, well, not gonna bother reading the rest of this.
Yeah, that's kind of a really rough way to land it into the particular series. You know, mine was, even though mine was in really bad shape, you know, it is at least a much more enjoyable story to read.
Yeah, I had a very weird childhood, because again, I only say that because I grew up in, like I said, late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
And a lot of the comic books we used to get were just kind of, my grandmother would just get books off the rack,
yeah,
and bring them home, and she'd go food shopping, or like my dad would take us to the store and I would just pick up one that looked cool. I wasn't like collecting a major series until a little bit later with X-Men.
Yeah.
So a lot of stories I just bought, like, and they were surprisingly dark, because again, it was the early 90s, and that's
yeah,
what you did. Like, you know, my first
right,
Teen Titans first Titans book, the tower blows up. Or I read a RoboCop comic, and he's having that thing where, in like a lot of the RoboCop movies, where he's kind of having that conflict between his human aspect and the machine, and he's having like this breakdown, and he can't determine of which of his targets are innocent and which ones aren't. And I'm like, well, this isn't exactly good for a child.
Right. Not exactly. But
and then like one of the very first Marvel comics I ever read was, it was a Spider-Man annual, but it was Spider-Man, War Machine, Black Panther, but they're fighting Ultron. And he's basically converting, you know, these Ultron duplicates into people. And it was just, again, it's just a very, very heavy story. And it's like, man, I kind of wish I was like my parents who grew up, like, let's say in the 70s, who their books were maybe a little bit more lighthearted.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Yeah. I mean, that's the power of comics, you know, whether they're really dark or much more lighthearted, you know, they have the ability to really pull us into this other world where you can really, you know, learn about the characters, but also learn a little bit about yourself and what you like and what you enjoy seeing, and even finding aspects of those stories that you can sort of help you to get through, you know, through your daily life, you know. So yeah, it's amazing that those stories really stick with us no matter what form they came in. Even to this day, we remember those stories. And I remember a lot of the comic books I read when I was a kid. A lot of those stories definitely stuck with me.
I'm so excited to read what's coming up next, because again, I've had so much fun reading Nowhere Man. I can't wait to read everything else though. But
oh yeah, you're gonna really love it. Particularly, I think volume two is, you know, I really felt like I grew a lot as an artist and as a writer, and it's much tighter, you know, has some poetic flows to it, which I, you know, really want to see come into the story. I really hope that you get a chance to check out volume two. And one of the things that I want to plug before I forget is that we have this discount going on right now on our online store. Our official online store is forwardcomicsshop.com. And, you know, that's spelled with a COMIX, but we also have the regular spelling there too. So if you go to forwardcomicsshop.com, we have a promotional event going on, which I think wraps up on the 15th of this month. So if you go to our website and add things to your cart, you know, whether it be books, or we actually have some prints over there too. And when you get to checkout, in the promo code area, enter Jack, that's J-A-C-K in all caps. That will give you 30% off and free shipping. So that's a great way to awesome. Jump into the series. Yeah.
Yeah. For everybody who's hearing that, now you have no excuse as to why you didn't check out the series.
I think that's a really good deal. And again, those books come directly from our personal inventory. So that's a great way to get the books. And also, most of those books that ship out directly from us get signed. So I'll be able to sign them for you.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. There are other places to find us if you are used to some other platforms that you prefer to buy your comic books on. We're available on Amazon. Pretty much the entire series thus far is on Amazon, either as a print book to be ordered or as an ebook. And in addition, we can also be found on Barnes & Nobles. You can order from the website or go to your local Barnes & Nobles and have them order for you and have it for you in the store. And of course, we love being on Comixology. We are also available on Comixology. And in addition to winning the Glyph Comics Award, we actually won some recognition from Comixology as well. So definitely check us out there if you'd like to buy your comics on Comixology.
Awesome. Congratulations, man. You're blowing up.
We're trying. Definitely trying and, you know, definitely putting our best efforts in.
Jerome, again, this has been so much fun, and I'm so glad you're able to come back, because there was just too much great stuff that, like, I would hate to have lost.
Oh, no problem. No problem at all. And, yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me on. This has been a huge pleasure, and, you know, we're going to do our best to make sure that we're more visible. You know, we love to spend our time producing new work, but part of that too is making sure that people know what we're doing. So, you know, our official website is forwardcomics.com. You can go there to learn more about what we're doing, and then the click throughs are there for our online store, which is forwardcomicsshop.com. We're also social media spaces like Twitter and Facebook, so you can check us out there. And I think we also have a semi-frequent Tumblr account that we're working on. So yeah, definitely look for us. We're definitely there. So yeah, check us out.
Great. And Jerome, again, thanks a lot. And you've all heard that. And hopefully you'll continue to support awesome indie books. Again, that'll do it for Adrian Has Issues. We will see you next issue.